Next up, Bigfoot Giants with Stephen Quayle right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We're with Stephen Quayle. Stephen, blonde Bigfoot?
Well, George, it's a remarkable story. I tried all day to get a hold of Tim Peeler, who lives in basically Cleveland County, North Carolina. But what was amazing about this was obviously him noticing the six fingers. And people should understand that the history of Bigfoot goes back to the Epic of Gilgamesh. And I'll give a little bit of a background, if I can, when we get there. But sure. Basically, the story, and you can go on YouTube or you can go on any search engine and see him talking about the Bigfoot killed one of his dogs, and then I think he had five dogs, one of them was killed, and also chickens, and he basically shoot it off with a stick, and it went up the path, and it came back multiple times during the night. Now, most people just laugh and say, well, man, that guy's out there, but what's interesting is that in the very same region, a gentleman with a thermal camera, and a thermal camera is totally different than night vision that works on heat. Okay, you see them obviously in helicopters in the FLIR mode where you see black and white images, and you know it works on the heat radiating off the body against a field of a known temperature. The point is that the fact that it's blonde, the fact that it had the face of a man, and he drew a picture of it, but he noticed it was 10 feet tall and it had six fingers. Now that's critical. Because, again, as I go back through history, and by the way, I'm tracking another very current, sighting in the Pacific Northwest right now, and also some pretty interesting bones. And maybe I can't talk about where they're at, but I will say this, that for a long time, George, you know, the standard question I get asked, well, where are all the bones? There are no skeletons. This thing is a national security issue. The reason it's a national security issue is because of a wonderful thing called the double helix, the DNA. Yeah. Now, the very people we talk about, the Illuminati, who has controlled all of the true historic, true archaeological finds, all the rest of the books of Enoch. I have fragments on my website, but there are 359 other books of Enoch. Enoch was given 360 books shown by God how everything in the universe worked, and obviously the Illuminati uses occult and hidden knowledge and keeps it from the rest of us. But the thing that's fascinating about this latest Bigfoot sighting is the sound the thing made. I'm gonna explain to people that every time I do Coast to Coast with you, we do it together, obviously. The thing is that people will call me. It doesn't matter if they're law enforcement guys in the Midwest, the West Coast, the East Coast, and they'll talk about encountering these things that run through forests, knocking down trees. But the thing they always talk about, George, is the sound that is emitted, okay? The sound that is emitted. Now, people say, well, why can't we find those things? It's my contention that they're using basically doorways, because some people call them stargates. And the reason that they have the sound they emit is I one time asked the Special Operations Command General, I said, how do these gates work? And he said, they work sonically, they work, and understand, these are people that don't argue that if it's not on Fox, it doesn't exist, okay? If it's not MSNBC, it can't be real. But they work on a power source, they work on basically a sonic, in other words, sound precedes light, even the book of Genesis, and God said, that let there be light. So the people who are looking for the God particle should understand that just in the last week, the songs of the sun were just recorded. Did you see that story?
You sure did.
So what I have called all along the harmonics of creation, the sonic nature of the universe, when God said, let there be light, he has the power by the sheer word of his power to speak things into existence, okay? People say, I don't believe in God. Well, then why do you think that every planet, every star, every single human being, you have a song in your genes, and I'm not talking about a CD in your Levi's, okay? I have a song in mine, and everybody has their own harmonic vibrational frequency, okay? Now, interestingly enough, there was a book, and this all relates to what I'm talking to you about Bigfoot, because people say, I don't get it. It's like I track them. I've had people tell me this. I track them. One guy said, Steve, I know how to hunt, but this thing scared the hell out of me. And he said, it's like it vanishes into thin air. Well, in 1879, there was a guy that wrote a novel called It was Edward Litton, Lytton, Vril, V-R-I-L, the power of the coming race describes basically a form of earth energy possessed by an extremely powerful subterranean race associated with life-giving elixirs. Now, but listen to this. At the heart of the Vril, this is what Hitler was into big time, and we've talked about Nietzsche and Ubermensch, the Superman, okay? Knowledge of sonic equations with mirrored waveforms of light and electromagnetism capable of interacting with and affecting the human nervous system and consciousness, as well as other life forms, geophysical structures, planets, and other stellar systems. In other words, the sound, George, is absolutely what is, in my opinion, based on what I know at this point, and I'm open to anything more, but the sound is what these things are having to use for dimensional portals, and they can basically go in and out, they can phase in and phase out, and the sound is basically when they're either activating, because I've noticed something in all, and you know I spend my life tracking this stuff, in every situation it's a sound that either seems to bring them on the scene or take them off the scene.
Is anybody investigating this scientifically, Stephen?
Oh, sure. There are a lot of guys. There's a great website, by the way, if people want to see the history of it. I think it's called BigfootLives.com, and with a hyphen between Bigfoot and Lives. And I think the thing that people need to understand is that there's a lot that's known but isn't made public, okay? For instance, every single species, the reptilians that David talks about and others talk about, and by the way, Quetzalcoatl, the god of the Aztecs, was a giant plume serpent in a 10-foot tall reptilian. You know, you can claim what you want, but that's who they claim was their progenitor. The Aztec, Incan, and Mayans, George, all claim that they were their, you know, civilizations and their architecture was built by giants. But here, let's get back to Bigfoot. And most people would be astonished to know that, you know, the first recorded account of in North America is in 1986 when Leif Erikson and his, men landed. They talked about the horrible, ugly, hairy, swarthy, and big black-eyed men, okay? Now, that's pretty interesting. Most people, you know, some people get hung up on who really discovered America. Well, even goes before that. Obviously, the Celts were here before Leif Erikson, and the Hebrews were here 2,000 years before this. So, but the point I'm trying to make is that you can go to medieval wood carvings, and they'll show a hairy wild man, which, interestingly enough, the Bible talks about the lion men of Moab. And the thing that's fascinating to me is you track it all through history. They're known as the Matlocks, the Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Wild Men, and the Oma, O-M-A-H. And you're going to love this one, Skookums. And the Skookums, and that's those were cannibals, okay? And what are called the Bukwas, B-U-K-W-A-S. Now, obviously, the Yeti, some people pronounce it, and all over the world. See, this is something you can't escape. So this isn't just a guy with the invention of Kodak 8mm movie film filming the first Bigfoot. And what I'm told again and have been told many times that the species, and I believe they call Bigfoot Species 7 or Species 8, everything that is, if you will, imaginary to us or the things of nightmares, that which exists in the real world has a species designation with all of the differentiations within the species. I'm not just talking about Bigfoot now. I'm talking about the different aliens, all that stuff. Now, again, you know, when we talk about this stuff, people say, oh, right, like, really? No, listen, history is on our side. The reason, and I want to address this, the reason the bones of all the giants that have been found, I document over 200 or 300 that I know of, in my book alone, Genesis 6 Giants, and I'm encouraging, George, everybody to get that book, because I have said this for the last 30 years. What you have been dismissing as fantasy, myth, and legend is going to simply appear on the scene with such rapidity that people's hearts are going to fail them for looking after all these things coming upon the earth. So for this man to see, Tim Peeler to see, a six-fingered, 10-foot-tall, blonde Yeti, you know, or Sasquatch, we'll call it whatever, Bigfoot. The thing is, and to be able to define the noises is so tantamount to me that he is seeing the real thing. Because when you see the fakes, one of the things I always ask them, tell me what you sensed in the air. Tell me what the hair on the back of your head did. Tell me the sounds you heard. Did you get a pain in the back of your neck? This isn't because, you know, this is 101 ways to tell if a Bigfoot setting is real or not, but those are electromagnetic waves emanating from the skulls. Remember I told you about Dr. Muldashev going to Tibet and literally seeing a giant that was in stasis, in other words, suspended animation.
Right.
I've told you about the fact is that the monks told him you can't go beyond, you know, this line. If you go beyond the line, you'll die. And he didn't understand the, if you will, the electromagnetic projection, even while these things are in suspended animation. By the way, I was told that how, if you will, how the giants, the real giants, I'm not talking about the tall, I'm talking six fingers, double rows of teeth individuals hunt, and they hunt by the harmonics of DNA.
Are they violent?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Most cases are cannibals.
Cannibals?
Yeah, like cannibals. And for the record, it's interesting because I don't know if you saw the story. Did you see the story coming out of Cancun the other day about the finding the bodies of the sacrificees that had their hearts ripped out in a cave in Cancun?
No, I wouldn't doubt it, though.
Yeah. So, see, what's happening is the entities that have been bound in the abyss, God really does love his creation. And what people don't understand is that God gave mankind, the mankind that he created, he gave them basically liberty of free will, but also authority. And now the people who are basically at war with the living God are taking that authority and they're releasing these things and they're opening the gates. Jesus said that the gates of hell will not prevail against his church, meaning, and his church isn't a building, it isn't a steeple, it's the people that gather his name, ecclesia, you know, those that having the fellowship of him in common. The bottom line is so when you're dealing with the sound and the frequencies of the Bigfoot, and you're dealing with now the appearance and disappearance of them, it's now amazing to me that I think there's a whole new area of understanding and investigation opening up, because you cannot mess around with electronic or electromagnetic spectrum and not pick it up.
Okay? How many of them do you think are out there, the species of the Bigfoot
family? You know, I asked that question, and basically I was told this answer, whether it will suffice, thousands. I'm talking throughout the world now. I'm not
throughout the world. Yeah, and that's not a lot.
No, but the thing is, and I asked, how about, you know, the head of Skunk Works, I used to have his quote up on my website, said, if the American people ever found out we've already been to the planets, been to the stars, and been beyond that, you know, they basically string us up. The bottom line is, I asked, how many species of aliens are there? And he said, millions. Now, so if somebody who lives in that world, and trust me, with the way their men react, these guys really are who they say they are. And the point is that I think it's the old adage. How will people accept a warning? In other words, let's just put it into Steve and George. George, you tell me, hey, Steve, I think that somebody's going to burn down your house. I saw a guy with matches and a gas can, and I think, you know, he didn't look like a happy camper and looked like he had your house. You know, there is an evidentiary or a body of evidence that everyone has to move on or move forward with, correct? If
sure.
I choose to say, I don't believe you, George, and my house burns down, it's not that, you know, my believing whether
I told you, right?
You told me. And see, this is the thing. It's beyond I told you so. The very Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, most people, and look, when I have multiple sources telling me this, people in the intelligence community, people in the military, people in the scientific community telling that all the stuff that they're doing to attenuate, turning into its, you know, you've had Kurzweil on your show, singularity, you're going to the whole Ubermensch thing now in a whole new dimension, okay? You know, it's like this, it's like the devil saying, I can do a better job creating mankind or recreating them in my image, God, than yours. If people don't believe in the God of heaven or the devil, the bottom line is then let them explain free will, because free will isn't a biologically determined function, or we'd all be thinking the same thing and doing the same thing, okay? But the point is that we are now dealing with things that are beyond our immediate grasp and comprehension. It's just like you and I. We'd like to think that people really care for people living on the Gulf Coast or on the West Coast. By the way, the West Coast doesn't get a reprieve either. the seismic loading of faults. Loading of faults is a term used in the military, meaning that you literally pulse energy into a fault and you use it as an energy sink or an energy battery, and with the whole idea of causing the plates to move. So, you know, there's so much what I call black science out there, black meaning secret science, and it's all at their fingertips and at their control. And at the end of the day, the whole issue is destroying mankind, 5.5 billion people.
In your opinion, do you think Bigfoot could be supernatural, dimensional, or very physical?
I think it's all three. I believe it can basically transcend dimensions. I call them, you know, in my earlier writings, I call them transmorphic demonic entities. They take on physicality. They obviously eat chickens and eat dogs and people at some cases. And the people who defend Bigfoot say, well, there's only two cases of it. Well, I can tell you this. In history, the giants were fee-fi-fo-fum. Smell the blood of an Englishman, okay? The thing that is really amazing to me is that there's such a disconnect between what history states versus what is happening. Again, if you knew that you could extract live DNA, remember when Spielberg did Jurassic Park on Michael Crichton's novel?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was so astonishing to people. Yet understand, when that stuff leaks into the world of film, it's already been done, okay? It's not that it's plausible. It's not even that it's possible. It's already been done. And you and I, George, have talked at length. Have you seen the movie Splice yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, without ruining for everybody, simply this. Artificial life form is made in a laboratory between two scientists who have a love interest in each other. The woman scientist takes her DNA, inserts it into the artificial life form, which they've created from scratch, and it creates kind of like a female-looking character that looks all the way female, except she has a tail, okay? Well, interestingly enough, okay, you would think, okay, here's an earthly female inserting her DNA into an artificially grown biomass, and all of a sudden, this girl that they call Dren, and by the way, I'm just telling you, this is in-your-face stuff. She's on the top of a roof ready to fall off, and instantly she sprouts wings, okay?
Wings?
Wings, W-I-N-G-S, okay? Then, what's really important for everyone to understand, then Dren, which is the product of the girlfriend of the male scientist, the creature that's created, basically has sex with the male scientist and produces, you're going to love this, George, a 10-foot giant with wings.
Jeez. I wonder if that's what the Mothman was.
Well, I got to tell you something. That's what you relate to, isn't it?
Yep. Sure
that's
does.
What you sync with. So, okay, now you have a story. You've got a story of artificial life being created in the laboratory. You've got, Splice is so in your face. But as I tracked it back and trying to think, okay, where could that gene have come? And obviously the answer is either the man had to carry the gene of the Nephilim or the woman. And somebody says, well, that's just science fiction. Okay, but ladies and gentlemen, every day, hundreds of stories are appearing on artificial life, singularity, the end of man, the new coming man, the idea that get rid of everybody on the planet and start out with a whole new creation that basically is programmed to live differently. See, that's what Jesus said. If he didn't intervene, George, in the book of Revelation, that, you know, if God simply didn't act, that men left to their own devices, evil and totally wicked, are going to destroy. And people said, I don't believe it. Well, how about the water you drink? How about the genetically modified food you drink? How about the reason that men's sperm counts are so low is because there's so much xenoestrogen in the plastic? Or whatever, women coming into puberty at 9 or 10 years old. You see, we're being genetically altered. And this is what the chemtrail, and for the people listening out there that understand chemtrails, I was specifically told by men of rank that they have no one higher to basically check out, that we are, our whole planet is having the atmosphere change for those things that are ready to come upon the earth.
And when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we will talk giants. Well, if you want to be part of Streamlink Coast Insiders, just go to coasttocoastam.com. It's just pennies a day. You get your iPad and your podcasting and your archives and just about everything else at coasttocoastam.com. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Stephen Quayle. But when we're back, giants on Coast to Coast. Stephen, one of our StreamLink members from Scotland sent you an email today, and I wanted you to talk with us about this. This is about an old story that occurred in the 1930s. What did you think of that one?
Well, again, George, what people can't get around, he was talking about a giant that was in a stream in India, and this gentleman ran into him, and basically the link that he sent us, it wasn't a lot, as you know, but he said that it took the man months to recover. He was so disturbed by what he saw. That's pretty much it in an encapsulated version. But the point is that there are literally tens of thousands of people who run into giants, and I'm talking giants now, I'm not just talking about big guys like somebody who's 7'6". To my definition of giant, they gotta be at least 10 feet tall, okay? Now, 9 feet would probably send chills down most of our spines, but there are certain things that have to take place. I think that if you go through history, even like the front of my book, and by the way, George, the front of my book, those guys are in the Kashmir region of Afghanistan and Pakistan and India, kind of where all the mountains come together. And that was taken in 1910. My front of my book, for those of you who have never seen it, is Genesis 6. And I really want to make an informational suggestion. For those of you that are starting to see the availability of this stuff coming into play, in other words, more reports of these things, you need to understand, in my opinion, what's really going on. And the only place you can get the books is on the internet, stevequayle.com, or call tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. Stan and Holly are sleeping now, but 719-547-9100. 719-547-9100. And that's where you can also get my book, Long Walkers. And, George, we had the pilot who flew a dead giant out of Afghanistan several years ago on your show. I actually have his letter to me. He said he listened to Coast to Coast. He thought I was full of you-know-what. Then until he got ordered to fly, went out. And by the way, since he went public with that, he's been given every quote-unquote, you know what kind of mission that, he's paying a price for telling us what he told us, okay? And he said, Steve, even if it costs me my career, I will come on, you know, again, Coast, and tell people what's really going on. Because again, George, this is a gentleman that is absolutely not a friend of a friend of a friend. He's the guy that flew it out. Even could tell me the pallet number, what the thing weighed, where they flew it, and how the spooks, meaning the intelligence people, came on the plane to take out any phones that might have cameras, any cameras. I mean, they went through their pockets and everything. So when people say, well, why don't people get pictures of these things or blah, blah, blah? Well, the bottom line is the minute you do is that the spooks, meaning intelligence or the FBI, somebody shows up to either threaten you. We've had listeners to your show that have unearthed giant skeletons where the head, the mandible to mandible, in the back of the skull is the condyle to condyle is 24 inches, okay? Mm-hmm. The molars are the size of a fist. Now, these aren't Neanderthals, okay? And by the way, isn't it interesting? They're no longer in the tree of mankind's evolutionary background, but they're a whole separate species. The point is, every time that anything shows up, it is confiscated immediately. People don't realize this, but in the United States, there is the Native American Antiquities Act that automatically states that any bones found of any size are Native American artifacts. And I'm not talking about grave robbing Indian graves. I'm talking about even the Kennewick Man in Washington, which was considered a Native American artifact until the people that went to court proved it was an Irishman, okay? The point that I'm trying to make is that there is it's an ultimate secrecy. It's just like this. We all know about Roswell. We all know about the guys who were there, saw what they saw, written the books and everything. But you know, and I know, we still get people that say, oh, they're crazy. They believe in UFOs. No, we don't believe in UFOs. We just acknowledge that they exist. So when it comes to giants, we're dealing with the same thing. Whether it's 1930 or 33 in India, whether it's the gentleman in North Carolina, whether it's 100 or 200 or 2,000 encounters with something other than what's normal, whether it's Mothman, whether it's this, that, or the other thing. The thing is that if someone says, well, it isn't real because I don't believe it, whether they believe it or not doesn't make it real or not. It's just that they don't believe it. Yeah. And the thing is even even if you were to give them undeniable proof, then they try and explain around. Well, it's acromegaly. That's what I always get. Acromegaly is a disease like Andre the Giant suffer from, and some of the big guys that are tall suffer from. It's a debilitating disease, and ultimately they die in a very short time.
Do you think Goliath was a giant?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Bible talks about not only Goliath being a giant, but Og, the king of Bashan. Bashan, by the way, was the land of the giants. And I can tell you point blank that the argument is whether Og was 15 feet or 18 feet tall. Goliath is presumed to have been 9 feet to 12 feet. And by the way, the reason David cut his head off, most people don't know their Bible very well, but, you know, David and Goliath, and, you know, some people say, oh, it's just a figure of speech. No, they've actually found stuff dating from that period. And the thing that is interesting is that, remember when I sent you the link on the axes that were found?
I'm looking at them right now.
Right. And I said, you know, the U.S. military policy on giants is don't axe, don't tell. The point is that those axes were found in the area of Crete, and they're in a museum, but the whole basis of the oral tradition, written tradition of that part, is that there were giants in Crete. They're still believed to be labyrinths in which people have disappeared. I had I don't know if you call him Cretan, but a Cretan call me and say he heard me on your show the last time I was on talking about giants, and he said, I want you to know, we still have people that encounter these things in the grottos and caves on Crete. So the thing is that, you know, this program goes worldwide. So typically I will get emails from all over the world, and I mean all over the world, sometimes 100 emails from different countries saying, well, so-and-so saw something. And it's not people feeding off each other, okay? It's not hysteria. It's not grandstanding, because some of these people can provide information that I don't even talk about on Coast, okay? Because if I did, then people would just feed back to me the same stuff they've heard me say. So you have to have some form of a Rosetta Stone to test to see that the sightings or the encounters are real.
Some of these internet pictures that we've seen all over the place, Stephen, some of them look pretty darn provocative. I got to tell you that.
Right. And most of those have never shown up on my website because a lot of them are Photoshopped. Now, the one that isn't, you'll see a guy that he looks like in Australia, and he's kneeling, and on the wall, there's a giant skeleton that's kind of impregnated in the sediment. Do you know that one, George?
No, tell me about that.
Okay, it's interesting because Australia has a tradition of giants. I mean, just a tradition. And a lot of the biggest bones have been found there. I've even had Australians who own property in Australia call me and tell me that the equivalent of the Australian intelligence has come to them and taken the artifacts they found. You remember the caves paintings of the Wajina? The Wajina are the guys who look like they're in robes with a space
mm-hmm,
helmet on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the bottom of the historical, what do you call it, the oral tradition of the natives, the Aborigines and everything they talk about, that's the dream period. And the thing that's interesting is that so many of the artifacts, whether they're cave paintings, cave drawings, sand, whatever was chronicled in whatever medium, the thing that's fascinating is that, again, it doesn't matter if you're in Australia, it doesn't matter if you're in the Arctic, doesn't matter if you're in any part of the world, it's always the same story, that there were giants in those days. And people don't understand, there were giants both before the flood and after the flood. And the thing that's interesting about that is that some of the words in Hebrew actually indicate, if you will, the twisting of the DNA. In other words, the genetic manipulation of DNA. That's what Tom Horn has been writing about probably as long as I have. And the twisting of the DNA is what is so interesting from the standpoint, if you deal with the Atlantis legends and myths, if you deal with Lemuria, if you deal with Hyperborea, if you deal with Shangri-La and Shambhala, and all of the, if you will, mythical lands, the interesting thing is you can't get away from giants. You just can't.
No, you can't.
It's throughout history. So the thing is that, you know, keep it simple, stupid. You know, the Occam's Razor states that probably, if it's in your face and it's simple to understand, don't make it more complicated. But why this stuff is all kept in abeyance, the truth, is because it's just like the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's just like all of the artifacts when people ask me where they're at. It's like Steven Spielberg's Raiders of the Lost Ark. They end up in crates in some place, or they end up in some private collection of some really wealthy guy. And it's like the people should go on my website, stequail.com, click on the Giants, and the Book of Giants is a copper scroll. In other words, it's something written thousands of years ago that explains the whole fallen angel interaction with human beings, the genetic manipulation of insects, of reptiles, of everything. So when we're seeing all these hybrid creatures, chimeras or chimeras, some people pronounce them, satyrs, all of the things in mythological folklore, and now we're seeing that people are saying, you know, we can reconstitute, in other words, reanimate anything. It's fascinating because here's a story that people should understand, that evil spirits, the word demon means disembodied spirit, okay? A demon is not a fallen angel. There are some people who use the terms interchangeably. They're not the same. In order for something to be disembodied, it originally had to be embodied. So the demons, when somebody dies, let's say someone who's demon-possessed, take anybody in history, Stalin, whoever you know, the great mass murderers, Jack the Ripper, whatever, those demons, Hitler, those demons, they are eternal beings. They don't just basically crash when its host crash. Can you imagine, George, the DNA of, welcome back? That's what Jesus said. When a demon's cast out, it goes and wanders in dark places until it finds a host, a suitable house to enter into. So imagine there's a group of individuals out there that have collected the DNA or have acquired the DNA of some of the most incorrigible and most disgusting historic murders in history, and imagine reanimating them. Look, I'm not sitting here now watch someone steal what we're talking about and go put it in a movie script, but imagine that can really be done. And then imagine that if you're making war against the human race, and that's what these people are, they're misanthropes, they absolutely hate the human race, then the bottom line is that all-out war is going to be levied against us, and it's my contention that right now you won't see just a linear scale of events. You'll see compounding events. You'll look to the left, bad news. Look to the right, even worse news. Look behind you, cascading bad news, a tsunami. Look in front of you, the solar storm. It's like so much is happening now, and there's never been a period in time. Look, everybody said it all. They thought the end of the world would be this, that, or that, and I don't believe the end of the world. I just believe that the bottom line is, in other words, the world isn't going to end. The point is, though, it's going to go through such drastic and dangerous war in all realms that literally men's hearts are failing them for fear of looking after those things coming up on Earth. So what's the antidote for fear? Understanding this stuff, even if you don't agree with it. But the point is, like anybody who teaches survival, you don't say that, you know, your ultimate survival tool is a Swiss Army knife and a flint, so you can at least make fire and, you know, stay warm. No, it's your head. It's the knowledge that you have, and that's what I've devoted my life to. You know, I get a kick out of it. People that have never even read one volume of any ancient writings telling me there are no such things as giants because there are no bones, you know, or saying me, oh, that all that God stuff, that's just crazy stuff. Oh, yeah? Well, the devil believes God's real, and so do his adherents. And they absolutely know this is a battle. It's a battle just like in any of the cinema, the battle of the light versus dark, good versus evil, and the book of Revelation. And I want to share something, George. People quote it, but they don't understand that the book of Revelation is the revelation that God gave to John. John is the apostle John, on the island of Patmos concerning Jesus. And then Jesus is the one that is stepping up the plate, opening up the seals that are telling us all what's going to happen. So the thing is, it's not the revelation of Buddha. It's not the revelation of the Hindu gods. It's not the revelation of everybody out there, their favorite holy guy. It's a revelation of Jesus Christ. And Jesus is the one that's telling. It's funny because I have people all the time quote Revelation. They say, but I don't like Jesus, or I don't believe in Jesus. I said, why do you think that is? And they said, well, because he's just one of many. I said, yeah, but who else makes the claim he did? And by the way, I don't see his bones being paraded around. I think the problem is, George, is that it comes when you try and bring the physical and the spiritual into
together.
Together. And see, these guys that you and I and Alex talk about, these guys are big time into the occult. These guys are big, and by the way, you know, we just passed the June solstice, and now we're going into a period of 7 days. I just got an email stating that LIBOR, the London interbank rates, that they're expecting that whole thing to crash, you know, next week. So the date I was given by my friend in China, who, by the way, is listening to us in real time, it's morning over there, everybody that I know, it doesn't matter what area of the world they're in, doesn't matter what field they're in, it's that sense that something's so ominously wrong, so something is so dangerously on the horizon. And what I'm trying to help people is, look, put two and two together, two and two still equals four, no matter what MSNBC says, no matter what Fox says, and if people can begin to put stuff together and say, now I understand. And if they understand, then that will motivate them to get themselves and their families to the best of their ability out of harm's way. And it begins with, obviously, look, you know, we're not going to live through this thing that's coming just by our own strength, our wits, or, you know, I've had guys in special operations that are, you know, cleaners, assassins, everything, say, no one's going to stop them. I said, you know what? You may be good at what you do, but the smallest germ you encounter that you've never encountered before that can take your life or take you down, how are you going to deal with that? You see, the thing is that we all make plans to deal with what we know, but now we have to deal with some of the unknowns that are coming fast upon us.
What with what we don't know.
You got it. But the thing is that, you know, hey, the same guy that said this is how the world is going to come into focus in the last days also said, I'm not going to leave you or forsake you. That's what Jesus said. So, you know, I get a lot of flack, George, because, you know, people say, well, I like to hear about your giants, but keep all that stuff about Jesus to yourself. Well, I got news for you. Jesus is the one that gave me all the stuff about giants. So if God is giving us the beginning and he's giving us the end, then, you know, then there's a point here. Faith. And faith has to be directed at someone, and that someone's got to be proven to come through. You know, and I have people, after I do this show, I'll get 100 emails, love the show, 10 hate the show. The point is that they should listen to the message and start to put into perspective that how will they react to food being unavailable? How will they react to maybe being billeted out of their homes? And how will they react as a gun owner, as a constitutionalist, as a patriot, as a veteran, as a talk radio show host? How will they react when everything that we're doing to tell people the truth by those who are trying to hold the truth as a lie want those of us who are trying to tell the truth silence? Internet? All right, there's going to be new regulations
on
that.
Some people get upset, Stephen, because they just don't believe this could happen.
Well, right. And again, you know, by the way, when you study crime and you study the psychology of attacks on innocent people, do you know up until the point that they're literally attacked and hurt, they believe, even while they're being attacked, this can't be happening to me. I don't believe it. You follow me?
Now, what happened to the giants? Did they get wiped out in the flood?
Well, the first set got wiped out in the flood. The second set, basically, and that's what the Bible deals with, and they fled all over the earth, okay? Joshua and Caleb go into the promised land. They say they're as grasshoppers in their sight. These guys, George, fled all over the earth. You know, with their power, their strength, their ability, and their technology, they absolutely fled to the four corners of the earth. Now, God, at a certain point, bound the ones that committed sex sin in a place called Tartarus. It's a specific place for the angels, or fallen angels, or two groups, basically. The ones that procreated with women, and people say, Jesus said in heaven they are neither given or taken in marriage. These aren't guys who stayed in heaven. These are guys who came to earth and inserted themselves or injected themselves into the seed of man. The reason they did that was to try and interfere with the promise that God said that through the seed of the woman would come the redeemer of the human race, okay? So the point is, if you can try and cut the promise of God off, then the devil can smirk and say, see, God's a liar. The bottom line is the second influx of fallen angels after the flood. I mean, in my book, I chronicled, I think one of the very first times you and I ever talked was about a group of Indians in South America that were literally pillaged, and I'm talking the women, were pillaged by these guys. And for the record, fallen angels can size themselves appropriately. fallen angels don't always come on the scene as giants, okay?
Stay with us, Stephen. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Stephanie Quayle, by the way, Stephen's daughter.